This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we hear about a possible breakthrough on what may be the most promising green fuel for the future, and we find out why a group of volunteers were out in the rain sawing and hefting timbers in front of Blue Heron School last Saturday. So now let's go inside the Compass. When Dr. Jacob Leachman talks about the potential of hydrogen as a green fuel, he does it with the kind of bright-eyed enthusiasm normally associated with 11-year-olds and brand-new bicycles. But Dr. Leachman has good reason to be excited. He believes he and his cohort at the Hydrogen Properties for Energy Research Lab at Washington State University Pullman, where he is an assistant professor in the School of Mechanical and Materials Engineering, may have found the key to the most persistent puzzle preventing hydrogen from attaining its potential as the perfect green fuel for the future: how to efficiently store the gas and distribute it to its markets. Dr. Leachman was in Port Townsend to make a presentation on his work last week for the regular lecture series known as the Energy Lunch, and I managed to take him aside for a brief interview. I understand that there's been some kind of exciting breakthrough that brings you here today.
Well, we got a lot of exciting things going on. One of the things that we think we've solved is improved the efficiency of hydrogen liquefaction. So delivering liquid hydrogen has been a key challenge. We've only got 8 large liquefiers in North America. Having the ability to make a small hydrogen liquefier could help communities like Port Townsend or Jefferson County generate their own liquid fuel and start refueling hydrogen vehicles or selling the liquid fuel to other markets in the area.
Now, I always thought that one of the big obstacles to creating hydrogen for use in vehicles and so on was actually the energy costs of splitting it out from, because, I mean, water is the source, right, for hydrogen. That's where we would obtain it. So does this have to do with that splitting, or is it just liquefying the hydrogen once it's split out?
There are a number of technologies that can make hydrogen, okay, whether it be solar, algal, biomass. I mean, there's a whole bunch of technologies where you can get hydrogen from. The problem, in my view, and a problem not many people are working on, is what do you do with that hydrogen once you have it? Do you put it in a balloon? I mean, hydrogen is really low density, and so the challenge is making it into a higher density form that is then portable so that you can sell it.
And how do fuel cells work? Most of the hydrogen vehicles that we've heard about, you know, like they work on fuel cells.
Yeah, so hydrogen, there's two atoms called protium in a hydrogen molecule, and when they get to a catalyst, they are more attracted to the metal in the catalyst than the other hydrogen atom, so they end up splitting. And that allows you to create a stack of many of these different catalysts and cause the hydrogen, which then splits, to react with oxygen and extract electrical power in the process. So the neat part is there's no moving parts in a fuel cell, and there's really hardly anything to break down. So you got very, very low maintenance associated with these and very good reliability.
So what has been the sort of cost impediment?
There have been two primary restrictors to fuel cells. On the fuel cell side, the platinum, it's a rare earth metal. It's in the catalytic converters in all your cars, trying to reduce the amount of platinum. Now, over the last 10 years, we've reduced it 6 times over, which is a really big advance not many people know about. But the big cost is getting the hydrogen from wherever it was produced distributed to the site and then dispensed into your car. That what you do with the hydrogen once you've created it, that's the challenge. And so we've got an approach where within a 20 or 40 foot shipping container, we can take hydrogen from electrolyzed from water, liquefy it using our little new invention that we have in a small approach like this that's still somewhat efficient. And then with that liquid hydrogen, you put it in a tank, seal the tank, and just let it boil. And just by heating that cold liquid hydrogen at minus 420 degrees Fahrenheit, you can get 17,000 PSI, which is more than enough to distribute to the cars that are currently for sale that run on 10,000 PSI hydrogen.
So what is the breakthrough?
So we're taking World War II era technology. It's called a vortex tube. And we realized that by putting a small catalyst, a thin catalyst coating on the inside of this vortex tube, that it unlocks the largest energy or entropy consuming phase change reaction of any material at very low temperatures. And so conventional hydrogen liquefiers have to work against this phase change to remove this energy. Our approach actually uses this phase change to directly help liquefaction, an entirely new approach that nobody has come up with yet, to use this for actually helping with liquefaction. So that's what we're really excited about. Folks have said that these vortex tubes, these World War II technologies, should be used in liquefiers anyways. Putting our catalyst in could double the performance of these over conventional units.
What is a vortex tube?
You can buy one on the internet for $100, $120. It's literally just you connect it to your air compressor that you've got at home. They're fun. They have no moving parts. It's a tube that comes at a right angle to it. Looks like a T. Out one end, you get hot gas that spins on the outside of this tube. It's extracted. And then the center gas spinning in the center of the tube, like the center of a tornado, is moving much slower. So it's much colder. And you extract that gas from the other end of the T. And so just from 90 PSI from a home air compressor, you get minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit out one end, 120 degrees Fahrenheit gas out the other end with no moving parts. So it's really exciting that way. So you want to know, why aren't these in everybody's refrigerators, you know, around the country?
Or heating their homes.
Or heating their homes, yeah, for that matter. And it's because there's a lot of energy with the compression going into it. And so at really cold temperatures for liquefaction, there are no refrigerants that actually work to help liquefy like hydrogen or helium or any of the other gases. And so a vortex tube, while it might not be efficient enough to run your refrigerator in your home, has really good efficiencies for these really cold temperature processes. And so putting that catalyst that we came up with on the inside of this should significantly increase that efficiency even more. That's why we're so excited.
And so what is the catalyst, or is that a trade secret?
No, there's a number of materials. So rust would do it. Iron oxide, special iron oxide. Ruthenium is one of the best.
I get lots of rust without even trying.
Yeah, yeah, I know, exactly. So that's a fun thing. Hydrogen reacts with everything so easily that a lot of materials can be used as catalysts. So, and even our approach doesn't need much catalyst at all to be able to drive it. So that's the exciting part.
Do you have a rough estimate of what a liquid hydrogen generation commercial plant would cost?
So what we're trying to do right now, the Department of Energy has a $1 million prize competition to make an in-home or community-based hydrogen refueler. Our approach to liquefy the hydrogen prior to dispensing is totally impossible by everybody's opinion at this point. We're going to try to be the first to accomplish it. We're putting together a team of 20 to 30 students, and we're trying to crowdsource funds from the community and the state and other nonprofits. We're looking for 60K increments. We think in the 300K range, we can build this first prototype unit to demonstrate the technology. The Department of Energy will validate it that it works. And then we've got a company set up to start producing this when we know exactly how good it works and that, you know, it can really solve real needs for.
So this is all still sort of theoretical. You have not built a prototype yet?
Yeah, we're testing the prototypes right now. Yeah. So we're testing the prototypes right now. We know they work. We just don't know how well above the status quo they work. So that's the exciting part, is we're really confident in the process. We just need to optimize and prove this is the gains that you actually get. And that's the stage that we're at right now.
Now, isn't it dangerous driving around with like tanks of liquid hydrogen in the back of your truck?
I don't think it's any more dangerous than a gasoline-fueled vehicle myself. And the Department of Energy has ran lots of studies on this. They took two identical cars, one gasoline-fueled, one hydrogen-fueled, lit them both on fire in the fuel tank and just stood back and watched what happened. The hydrogen fuel, because hydrogen, you know, evaporates at 40 miles per hour, it's going up and away from the car. It literally has escape velocity. It can leave Earth. So you end up with a flame moving away from the car that doesn't damage the car at all. The gasoline pools around the base of the car and provides persistent damage if it catches fire. So in many ways, hydrogen is no better nor worse than any other fuel if you know how to handle the hydrogen. And in a lot of ways, it can actually be a very safe fuel.
Now, assuming that this does really work well and cheaply, how many vehicles are there out there on the market right now that would be ready to just, like, off the lot, use this fuel?
Yeah. So there are 8 major auto manufacturers that are committed to having hydrogen fuel cars for sale here in the U.S. within the next year. The closest fueling station, though, is in California. So I've driven the Honda FCX Clarity. It's awesome. It's like an electric vehicle, like a Tesla, but you don't have the 1,000 pounds of batteries in the bed of the vehicle to slow you down. It has all of the refueling perks of a gasoline fueled vehicle, but the spunk of an electric vehicle and the emissions of an electric vehicle. So that's what's really exciting about these new cars coming available.
Now wait a minute. Electric vehicles don't emit water, do they?
Water. Yeah, you could drink it. There was a celebrity challenge where they had to drink the water coming out of their fuel cell electric vehicle to survive in the desert. So they have a water as an emission, but it's a benign emission by most people's accounts.
Now, maybe you could explain for our audience why it is that hydrogen vehicles emit water. Why is that?
So they take oxygen from the air around us. And so that's just like your regular gasoline fueled car. It takes oxygen from the air and reacts it with the fuel. In this case, hydrogen's the fuel. And so H2O, 2 parts hydrogen, 1 part oxygen, and you've got all that water on our big, beautiful planet.
And so that's the only environmental problem that these cause is wet roads.
Yeah, that's not a problem you have much issue with here on the east west side of the state. we're really excited about the cars and the potential for a carbon-free system to support them.
And if the water is potable, that might actually help places like California that are suffering from drought right now.
Yeah. It's the amount of energy, though, to do that. There's a huge amount of energy. If you're creating all of your water from hydrogen, you'd need a place to put all the energy because it's a lot of energy that's stored in that water molecule. So you could get the water off of it and use it for something useful. Yeah.
So is this kind of a perpetual motion machine in a way? I mean, if you could use the hydrogen fuel to then split more water.
No, definitely. And we're not violating any laws of thermodynamics. I teach that to all of the Coug engineers in our state, so I better get that part right. No, when you look at all of the efficiencies of the whole system, you know, you're only getting about 10% of the energy that you put into it. But the exciting part is that's 10% energy that you didn't previously have because you're gathering it from wind or someplace else where you have no place to put that energy. And so that being able to store it in liquid hydrogen adds 20 to 30 times the value. And so there's significant value proposition in gathering hydrogen from some other source to use it for cars or forklifts or whatever chemical process you need it for.
So solar, wind, any kind of renewable energy, I mean, this could be the storage technique that that we've been looking for.
Yeah, it's exciting because the hydrogen, one of the big uses is for silicon solar wafer production. So you can imagine in some cases wind producing your hydrogen, which then helps produce more solar power in some cases. So it's kind of a new approach, totally a different approach to the hydrogen economy that we think we've enabled, and it's pretty exciting.
With Dr. Jacob Leachman of WSU's Hydrogen Properties for Energy Research Lab, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Compass.
Flip this one over the top, or flip this one over that, doesn't matter, just get it.
I'll tell you when you go
over here. Oh, sorry.
It was early Saturday morning, and despite a steady rain, a half dozen gray-haired men showed up at the appointed hour to cut and position heavy timbers and to set up metal posts out in front of Blue Heron School over by the bike racks. The men were all volunteers, and their ringleader was Recyclery Board President Case Kolf, the local sustainability visionary who has dedicated a lot of effort over the past couple of years to getting more kids on bikes. I interrupted Kolf in his work to ask him what was going on.
Let's see how it is this way.
Gotta go that way.
All right.
So why don't you just explain to me what's going on here today?
Well, we're cutting all the beams and rafters for the Blue Heron bike shelter.
I see. And who's responsible for this?
Good question. Well, the recyclery decided that it was time to get some covered bike parking here at Blue Heron. We've been working for a couple of years to get more kids to ride their bikes to school as part of our Step On It campaign to promote biking and walking, especially to school. And there is no covered outdoor space here at Blue Heron. And there are lots of kids who are starting to ride their bikes, but there's no covered storage for them while they're at school.
I remember when you launched this campaign, was it 2 years ago?
Yes.
Yeah,
right.
So, do you have any way of estimating how many kids have really responded and how many more kids are riding their bikes now than were then?
Well, we're going to be doing another bike tally at the end of the school year, so I don't have any numbers for you right now. But, you know, in the last 2 years, we've started this mountain bike team here at Blue Heron. We've got...
Which I understand has done quite well.
They're great. They're just very... It's... Yeah. The key is getting kids and their families out to bike. And so the parents are very supportive. It's getting more parents riding with their students. It's getting just a lot of enthusiasm going for this. So, yeah, we've been partnering with about a dozen different organizations and groups in town in the last couple of years for the Step On It campaign. People like the Printery, the Leader, the PDN, Carl's Building Supply, Henry's Hardware, just a lots of great support, Jefferson Healthcare. And
did those organizations supply the funds for building this structure?
Well, this particular structure is sort of an additional thing. Those organizations and groups have been supporting us for the last couple of years. Rotary clubs, both the Sunrise Rotary and the PT Rotary, have made donations for the last 2 years running. But for this particular project, and there seems to be a lot of enthusiasm for it, we've got about $10,000 worth of donated labor and materials.
Wow.
From volunteers and groups. You know, Duke Schold from Ready Mix Concrete donated seven cubic yards of concrete in a truck. That's $700 worth of concrete. So people are just stepping forward because they understand that this is just a great idea, community benefit. It not only helps get students more active, but student activity also increases their academic ability. That's been clearly shown. And what it does is also gets more cars off the road because more students walking and biking to school, the less parents have to drive. So that's good financially for families, and it's great for the environment. And so, you know, we're really excited that there's this much community support for it.
So I understand there's going to be a sort of christening kickoff campaign.
Right. May is National Bike Month, and we're going to kick it off with some ribbon cutting here at 2:30 on Friday, May 1st. So everyone is welcome to come. We encourage people to come by bicycle. Come and join us for the ribbon cutting and the great... Yeah, you know, the great beginning of a lot of different activities in May. We're also going to do a bike-a-thon. We're going to get ask students to walk and bike as much as they can between May 1st and May 6th, which is National Bike to School Day. So we'll have some special assemblies here at school recognizing those students who have biked and walked the most, and that's also great. But let me just say that for this particular project, this structure is about a $17,000 structure. So we are still paying $7,000 for materials. We got a seed grant of $2,500 from Oregon State University's Healthy Kids program that came to us through WSU. So we've been working with WSU and with Jefferson Public Health, Jefferson County Public Health on that grant, which is a great start towards funding this thing. We're also about to kick off a an Indiegogo campaign to get the community, the broader community, to support this campaign with small contributions, whatever people can give. And it's not only for this shelter, but we want to build a similar shelter up out in Chimicum. And Chimicum Primary School, they've already picked the location for it. We've designed a slightly smaller, but basically a significant structure. And when I say big, I mean this thing here that we're building is 40 feet in one direction and 26 in another. So it's an enormous structure.
Yeah, it looks pretty amazingly sturdy as well.
It's not going anywhere. It's been double engineered in the engineering. Quadra Engineering and B2 Engineering donated their time. Richard Berg and Tamara at Terrapin Architect donated all of the architectural work and engineering. We also have Blue Heron Construction that donated a number of days to get the foundation, the footings put in. Other significant players, Charles Landau, formerly from Timbercraft. There's construction going on in the back.
Charles right now, actually, with a sledgehammer on the post.
Trying to get the posts leveled off. Yeah, that's great. And then Hope Roofing is going to be putting the metal roof on.
And really, for free. I mean, they're
doing all that labor. Taylor Metal Products is giving us a discount on the roofing material, but Hope Roofing is donating all of the labor for that. So it's just wonderful to see everybody coming together to support this.
That's a real community project.
Yeah, right. And so we've got kids who came out and put their handprints in the concrete footings. Even the superintendent came out and put his hand in there. So even he's got his hand on this thing.
Well, I noticed that in the middle of one palm print, there's a little bronze plaque that says Courage. I don't know if you know the story behind
that. Oh, yeah, that's great. That's Diane Leshinsky, the principal here. And she's just been invaluable in her support for this this project and all of the biking education here. She's just been wonderful. And so we definitely wanted her to be involved in this as well. It wouldn't have happened without her, you know, ongoing support for this project. I forgot to mention, Edensaw donated a bunch of plywood panels that are being painted, and Peninsula Paints donated the paint. They're painting 20 2x2 foot plywood panels in the sixth grade art class here. So the entire front of the structure is going to have student art all over the front of it.
Mural.
Yeah. Well, they're separate panels, and so we'll see. They're really getting into it. They're
Have
being
you seen
very
the designs.
Oh, I've seen some of them, I'm not going to say anything. It's going to be a surprise. We're putting those up on Friday morning.
Well, I know you have to get back to work here. There's several more beams to be cut. So thanks so much.
Yep, you bet.
With Recyclery Board President Case Kolf at the construction site of the new Blue Heron School Bicycle Shelter, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. Finally, KPTZ Community Radio News brings you this reminder that there will be no Washington State ferry service between Port Townsend and Coopville this weekend, May 2nd and 3rd. The closure is to effect necessary repairs to the movable ramp for loading vehicles, known as the transfer span, on the Whidbey Island end of the run. Assuming the round-the-clock repairs are completed on schedule, regular service on the run will resume on the morning of Monday, May 4th. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Mondays and Saturdays at noon, Tuesdays at 5 p.m., and Wednesdays at 10 a.m., exclusively here on KPTZ, the home of eclectic, authentic community radio.
KPTZ Compass is dedicated to going into the community to bring the stories from the community to the attention of the rest of the community. If you're a community-minded person and consider yourself something of a storyteller besides, perhaps you'd like to join us. We stand ready to train promising people in the subtle arts of radio journalism. If you think this might be the right kind of creative work for you, please stop by the station at the Mountain View Commons to talk with us and fill out a volunteer application. And remember, if you have a news tip or story idea of any kind, send an email to news@kptz.org. That email again for news tips is news@kptz.org. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.